Now it's time for the futures.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks. Happy beautiful Sunday, sunny Tuesday. It's so sunny, it could be Sunday. And Mrs. Future?
That would be nice.
Yeah, we got a busy show today. Lots of, it's just funny. We didn't have any guests until this weekend, but then suddenly, boom, things fill up so fast. So
yeah, like really, everything in spring, it's just a time of year where everything's sprouting and all of a sudden things are full of color and it's happening fast.
So we got a number of great stories today for the first hour. And in the second hour, the first half, we have Dr. Bruce Damer coming on, just back from Pakistan. He's got some interesting reports from that part of the world, especially the influence of America and China in that arena. Also, he was at the Consciousness Conference in Tucson, Arizona, one of the famous ones, hung out with a number of very well-known personalities, including
Deepak
himself, who interviewed Bruce. So Bruce is going to be on from 3 to 3:30, and then at 3:30, one of our regulars, Greg Panos, is coming on with a guest, a millennial, who is going to be organizing a big VR immersive conference in L.A. He's going to be telling us about that. Cosmos. You imagine having a kid called Cosmos? That should be interesting.
Spacey parents, I guess.
Going to give us some download on what's happening in L.A., immersivity, which is very relevant right now because Mark Zuckerberg just announced about an hour ago that at the F8 conference, where Facebook developers are gathered for the next few days, that everyone is going to get one of the new Oculus Go headsets for $199. So it's really coming down in price to get into the virtual reality world. So let's get on with our news, shall we?
Ready when you are.
First of all, it was kind of sad that Larry Harvey passed this week.
That's it. Burning Man's treasured founder, no longer among the living.
The founder, Burning Man, one of the original instigators, passed away. He suffered a massive stroke at his home on the morning of April 4th. The whole Burning Man community resolutely held out for a miracle. Anybody as tenacious and strong-willed and stubborn as Larry would come back. They all hoped he would recover, but he passed peacefully April 28th at about 8:24 a.m. in San Francisco with his family around him.
So it's the end of the Larry era, end of the hat at Burning Man.
Yeah.
But, of course, the festival will live on.
Absolutely. It will continue. A nice quote from the Burning Man Journal from Larry Harvey. This may be the essential genius of Burning Man. Out of nothing, we created everything.
Wow. That sounds like creation in the universe at every level.
Yeah. When it goes away and it goes back to the desert and there's nothing there, then it comes back again a year later in full glory and then goes away and comes back, keeps doing that. It really shows you that we've figured out how to create civilization, disassemble it, make it go away, and come back again.
There you go. It's just like taking a breath.
Yeah. It's an amazing ability that we have now. Ephemeral cities.
Ephemeral cities. It really gives you pause when you think about civilization coming out of nothing and then becoming everything it is and then back to nothing again.
Sort of like rise and fall all in a few weeks.
That's right. Really teaches you to be zen. Don't be too attached because things are changing faster than you know.
And we like to create things. So as things go away, we like to make them come back.
That's right. When things go away, then there's space for new things to be created.
Yeah.
Blank slate.
So long, Larry. He would have been the first to say that this isn't an ending, but a start of a new chapter where we all have a hand and where we go from here.
Yeah. I very much treasure my memories of Mr. Harvey. He's quite an elegant, irascible guy.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Larry Harvey, the man in the hat from First Camp.
That's right. Always kept things in the humorous vein. Very much liked to laugh at life.
That's it.
Uh,
We found out today from one of our other fans that Mark actually spoke about some new things this morning.
Mark Zuckerberg. Mr. Facebook.
Yeah. To give you a little recap of his keynote speech just a few hours ago at F8, the developers conference for Facebook. Of course, you know, in the wake of Cambridge Analytica and the fake news stories and the Russian election tampering.
And the congressional hearings about all of that.
The incendiary hate speech that came out from this. Facebook dished out a number of apologies and embarked on a march towards creating more transparency in their initiatives and adjustments to their product so that privacy was a little bit more respected.
Yeah, and as we announced, since we were watching the blow-by-blow as he was interviewed in Congress, some of the changes that have been instigated at Facebook will allow everyone to be much more aware of every ad, who's placing the ad, what messages that advertiser is sending out to other people, et cetera, et cetera. So the transparency of the advertiser to the audience is going to be massively enhanced.
Hopefully, we'll see. We actually use Facebook every day, so we'll see how it goes. I have my hopes up.
Yeah. Well, I think that it was really a interesting time for Facebook. It's almost like they grew up, they came of age. Mark Zuckerberg had to continually stress that the purpose of Facebook is to bring people together and that their priorities are around safety and people and relationships.
Data privacy and the responsibility of the community for building experiences that people would like to have with Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the challenge is that people have to feel secure in Facebook and that Facebook has to take them seriously.
Well, Facebook is introducing a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that a lot. We're just about to come up on a break. So,
okay, I'm going to mention a couple of the new tech things after the break.
All right, folks, this is the Dr. Future Show here on Future Tuesdays on KSEO. We'll be right back.
Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, it was quite fun to see that they're thinking of the future with Facebook as well, especially with regard to virtual reality. I was impressed with some new augmented reality software, actually, that takes old video and old photos and looks at the room that you're in, you know, in like, say, Christmas time, 1988, that sort of thing, and recreates the environment, recreates the actual room where the thing happened.
I think we're going to have to get our VR guys in the second hour to comment on that because that pointillism virtual reality that was demonstrated during the Zuckerberg talk is a very interesting and, to me, kind of a new way of representing things in virtual space. Everything is a point, and they turn photographs into rooms that are represented by pixels in three dimensions.
Yes. Yes, it was fascinating. And considering that many of us have video from the past and maybe want to revisit those environments as a holodeck experience, if you will, or a virtual reality experience, that is rapidly becoming possible.
Yeah, right. The way it was represented, it looks like one of those impressionist paintings. So your photograph gets turned into an impressionist virtual reality room. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, at least initially, it's really quite impressive. For sure. Also, Zuckerberg said it'll take about 3 years to fix Facebook. He's been talking about how to do that and rebuilding trust and that sort of thing is really important to them. The election integrity, they're dealing with elections around the world, not just in our country, but in Europe and Mexico, all over the world where elections are being taken seriously. So that it becomes an issue with Russian meddling and other types of meddling going on. They took the proactive action in not just cutting off Russian meddling, but disabling their networks.
Yeah, any abuse was tracked down and the abusers were physically barred from further use in whatever way they could be, the entire network.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought was interesting was the release of a new virtual reality headset called Oculus Go for $199.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the lowest price I've seen for full VR.
Yeah, he did not exactly do that as a Steve Jobs type announcement. We got a picture of it. He said everybody in the audience is going to get one, and that his quote was that finally the first totally standalone virtual reality system. And I don't have any idea what he means by that. He didn't exactly demonstrate, but he did demonstrate this interesting feature that we were just describing where the pictures are turned into virtual reality spaces. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's a wireless future. It begins with this $199 headset, which we'll find out more in the second hour. We'll talk to our VR experts who are coming on at 3:30.
Right.
And be able
we'll
to delve
they're
a little
excited
more,
about it.
More deeply regarding that. The other thing that got my attention with the Oculus and virtual reality and Facebook was the Facebook Spaces. Now, that's a very advanced environment where you basically have your own office and virtual space and you can entertain visitors and you have whiteboards and you can exchange notes and while other people are visiting. It's like a group conversations can happen.
Yeah, we have played with that and it's a lot of fun.
It's like way
it's
more
avatar world.
Sophisticated than it ought to be for a Facebook product. You know, it's really it's like a whole nother division that's seriously advanced.
Yeah. Well, what we did with Facebook Spaces, thanks to Greg giving us access to a beta version of it, we were able to go in and talk to each other as avatars. So you know, we had a couple of different characters in there who all came in at the same time. And people who didn't have avatars were able to come in because you could virtually call them on your virtual cell phone, and then you could see their picture in the VR world. So you could come in as an avatar, but you could also come in as a phone call to the VR world. So it was really, really interesting seeing all these things come together.
So maybe you'll be able to try this with this new $199 headset. We'll have to get one, see what it can do.
Yeah, we'll give you a full report when we know more. We'll get some firsthand experience.
But it's the path to cheap. You know, in terms of virtual reality. And that's what it's going to take in order to make it a mainstream event.
Well, if it really is a standalone virtual reality, what does that mean? Does that mean, are we talking about?
Yeah, it doesn't need a phone stuck in it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, here's some specs. It's an Android Nougat 7.1.2. It's got a quad-core Qualcomm Snapdragon in it, 3 gigabytes of RAM, an Arduino GPU, 32 gigs of storage. $249, you get 64 gigs. Okay, so let's get micro USB, headphone jack, weighs 470 grams, about a pound. Starts at $199. Okay, now what kind of power, what kind of VR can you get with a quad-core Qualcomm Snapdragon, I guess is what it comes down to. That's 2.3 gigahertz Cairo HP cores and two 2.15 gigahertz Cairo cores.
Okay, let's stop speaking a foreign language.
Yeah, quad-core. This quad-core. And the screen is pretty high res, 2560 by 1440, 5.5 inch.
Okay.
Fast switching LCD with a 60 hertz refresh. Mm-hmm. And it'll go up to 72 hertz. So that's what we know about it.
Okay.
All right. It looks to me like it'll probably do the phone stuff.
Right.
Right. It'll do the phone type VR, the Google Cardboard stuff.
Right. Right.
Daydream.
And what was the Pokemon location game?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, then. All right, so that's what we have to say about Zuckerberg and F8 going on right now. Also, we have a couple links there. If you want to see the live proceedings from F8, go to our drfutureshow.com/links page, and we have a link directly for that.
Yeah, it's going on this week. You've got a few more days of F8 if you want to tune into the blow-by-blow for developers.
The other big techie news this week was the whole T-Mobile and Sprint combining.
Right. Yeah. That's still proposed, right? It hasn't actually gone through.
Well, they've been trying to do it for a few years now.
Yeah, I heard Obama didn't let them, but they think under Trump they might have more chance.
They've entered into a definitive agreement to merge an all-stock transaction between T-Mobile and Sprint, and the new company will be the new T-Mobile. And we'll have a value of about $59 billion for Sprint and $146 billion for the combined company. The combined company will be competing directly with Verizon and AT&T.
Mm-hmm. And what they're offering is really fast service?
They are betting on the 5G network. And the 5G network is the latest, greatest LTE-type network for high-speed internet on your mobile devices. It's somewhere between 10 and 100 times faster than LTE, which will allow a whole new generation of product, something that will probably allow us to do not just VR, but maybe projections, mixed reality projections.
All right.
Princess Leia effects, hologram transmissions.
So they're scaling up for VR.
VR
is the new internet, kind of. It's the unexplored frontier. All we need is more bandwidth.
Well, that's what they're doing. They're going to seriously up the bandwidth. Now, of course, this combines with some of the satellite bandwidth companies that are trying to put the internet into space.
Sure. Yeah, more providers.
In low Earth orbit.
Right.
More access to the internet.
Just more is better everywhere. We want more networks. We want bigger bandwidth. We want more providers. We want more access to new worlds that we've never explored before.
And it's happening very, very fast.
Sure.
Very, very fast.
Well, that's what the connectivity of the internet has brought us. We have so many well-informed, self-educated people focusing quality attention on where we all want to go, which is, this is a simulation environment. It's a simulation universe where we can actualize our thoughts, communicate them effectively to each other, and then use that to begin to create new aspects of reality.
It's at least like going from black and white to color TV.
At least. Minimum.
Minimum. A seismic shift, some might say. It will unleash this augmented stuff as normal. It's no longer a big deal. It'll be completely normal. Just like we always carry these phones. I mean, remember, we didn't carry phones all the time in our lives.
No,
I mean,
it's not 2007.
Supercomputers like in our pockets.
When the smartphones came out, that's when we started going for them.
Yeah.
I guess a few people were into the HPs or the smartphones before the iPhone.
And even Apple had one of them.
Right.
You know, so very interesting. So this will change again what we carry in our pockets. It'll go from just being a supercomputer communicator to something even more grand.
Right. Okay, listen, we have to go to a break, and I see we've got a caller, so I hope you hang on through the break. We'll be back with the next race of time with the Dr. Future Show. Hang tight, everybody.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Yes, we were just talking about 5G and the new merger of T-Mobile with Sprint.
Yes, and we have Pete in Santa Cruz who has a question about all that. So let's say hi.
Hey,
hi,
Pete.
Pete.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Let me check. Pretty good.
I was looking good.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I was just wondering what for a layman or whatever level below layman would be, what is 5G physically going to look like? How is it going to get to us? Like, what is, are we talking and more antennas everywhere? I mean, what are we physically talking about?
Well, they are talking about small cells, which means that they're miniature cell phone towers that can be placed in inconspicuous places like light poles or the roofs of buildings. And they don't require as much power as the current towers, and they perform better when they're clustered. They transmit data using millimeter waves, which gets their name from a narrower than average wavelength. They mostly occupy frequencies from 30 to 300 gigahertz. And that's high enough to avoid interference from surrounding signals, but too high to pass through physical barriers. That's one of the problems. In some cases, the leaves of trees can interrupt the download. So millimeter waves have their limitations, but they're a good fit for being able to be ubiquitous.
So basically, private property. So if my private property becomes a place where I can
Yeah, they might make a deal with you if you're in a nice location for a micro cell tower.
So I'm old school way of thinking. So when a scientist would come up with a theory or something like this, they would go through years of testing with mice or whatever types. So we're actually like basically human guinea pigs to all this technology, right? Because we don't know molecularly or whatever, chemically in our brain or our systems This is coming so fast. There's no way they could do the proper testing, is there?
Well, they do know that the waves don't really engage or interfere much with biological functions so far. But we do know that we're approaching frequency ranges where they might. There's some evidence to suggest that biology uses frequencies as well, and that their frequencies in biology would be in the terawatt range. And we're not quite using that frequency zone yet. But it is going to be a very interesting convergence of our technology with understanding how electromagnetics and biology interact. Now, because biology does use electromagnetics, we're just not clear as to exactly how. And that is the cutting edge in bio research, is understanding electromagnetics and biology. I mean, ultimately, we'll figure out how to create frequencies that actually may be of therapeutic value.
Do you know, I don't know if it was, the time goes by so fast, but not too long ago, EMFs and the effects were all the big rage, and there were studies, but they were never conclusive, and they kind of just faded away. Are they still studying? It seems like
the
science has never been captured on it. They don't really understand.
When we went digital,
to me,
we used way less wattage, way less power. And that was a big concern, was the amount of power we were pushing through. Yeah.
And the amperage is what kills you, that was affecting you.
And these phones are much lower, and a lot of people now use their speaker phone, instead of putting the phone against their head or using earbuds. That's a better to say thing. But you're right. We don't know a lot about the interaction of biology and electromagnetics, but we're learning rapidly. But I don't think there's a big cover up like you see with tobacco, big tobacco and nicotine, and it's
so dead. So do you think, this type of technology, it's going to have to be, how's it going to be paid for, the infrastructure? Is it going to be
through
the Comcast cable, or how are we going to see it?
Well, these guys have their own revenue model. Sprint and T-Mobile have their network that they're putting in place. AT&T has theirs. Verizon has theirs. And those are the competitors. So they're paying for it and then charging us our monthly subscription rates. So there's that.
So this all ties into the net neutrality. It's all relative.
Yeah, net neutrality is another complex issue on this. But in this case, there'll probably be other ways of accessing the net besides the cell carriers. Like, for example, Elon Musk is planning to put up a low Earth orbiting satellite network that will offer bandwidth. That'll be a competitor with AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. So you'll have a choice as a consumer as to which one to get.
And, interesting.
Yeah, and it all depends on what.
Okay, well,
what
thank you. I appreciate it. I'm just trying to imagine it in my eyes what it's actually the infrastructure is going to look like.
And yeah,
so you made it for you. You simplified it quite a bit.
Good. Right. I hope that helps. And check our links. We have some more information on that on our links page.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Appreciate the call. And
okay,
that was fun.
Yeah, and just to
learned a lot.
Yeah, it is evolving rapidly, and they don't. The T-Mobile and Sprint and these guys don't say anything about the low Earth orbiting satellite networks, which will be another competitive
arena. Well, they'll probably get into that arena themselves. Ultimately, everybody's in the business of having subscribers, and they're going to go for whatever the subscribers are willing to subscribe for.
Yes. Yes. Now, to give you an idea of how some of this technology could be used, we have a very interesting link from the Kurzweil people about how augmented reality systems are going to be used to let our physicians see medical images of people's internals, but projected on their external, on their body.
Right. Yeah. Treating the skin as a projector screen and projecting some kind of virtual model of
their own inside
person underneath.
So you lie down. One version of this would be real time and another would be analysis. But you lie down and instead of on an X-ray machine, if it's live, you'll see pictures of your skeleton moving around. It's kind of like that, only projected on your body. And it's not just the skeleton, but it's the internal organs. Or if there's a growth or something like that, you'll see that in 3D projected on your body.
Mm-hmm. To help your doctor to navigate to it, say, in a surgery?
To see it in your system, to see what your system actually looks like in real time.
Oh.
Yeah, projected on your body. It's more of a holistic.
It's a photograph of your innards.
Or a live
It's a live. It's a live video of your innards, a streaming video of your actual biology.
It's really good for physiotherapy, where you're looking at the motion of things and where it could be improved, or teaching people about how the body parts work together. You actually see all these internal elements projected on the body.
And so is there some kind of sensor technology that is giving you live feedback from the inside of your body?
Yes. They plug it into live sensors, MRI machines.
I see. So it's like an MRI.
Or it could be less invasive as well.
Different kinds of scans.
Different type of scanning systems that are rapidly becoming available. There's even some scanners for phones that you can plug in and see internal function.
Oh, like heat sensors.
For example, yeah. Mm-hmm. Heat sensors, ultrasound. Mm-hmm. Ultrasound, I saw a $500 sensor for an iPhone the other day. Amazing, huh?
Yeah.
So you put that and put your video projector on your phone and put it on your body, and you'll see if you're a woman and what your pregnancy looks like.
Wow.
In real time.
Right.
Just looking at a screen.
I know that a few shows back, we also had an article about how good the resolution is with, say, ultrasound, where they've gotten some AI enhancements where they take the base information and then they build even more features in so that the ultrasound gives you much more of a full picture of what you're looking for. Yeah, instead of the kind of smoky little shadowy picture, you actually get a whole baby.
Yeah, you see more of an information. And the AIs are now analyzing these things thousands of times faster than doctors and giving accurate results.
Right.
So that's rapidly evolving too.
Making doctors smarter faster.
Yes. And what we're talking about, this is what you call a user interface, looking at a projection on an actual body. There have been several other breakthroughs in user interfaces that I'd like to mention. One is a holodeck-style hologram that's a video conferencing system that's been developed at Queen's University in Kingston in Canada, and it's called Telehuman 2.
Telehuman 2 what?
Telehuman to appear as a stereoscopic image.
Okay, and sounds fun.
It creates a three-dimensional image of yourself at a conference, but you're inside a pod, if you will. It's not a two-dimensional projected on a flat surface. It's a round cylinder of glass, and your 3D image appears in the center of it. You're a 3D tube.
Okay, I think that there was some movie about the time machine where the future AI appeared in a cylinder. And that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, it's kind of a cylinder being.
It's a clear cylinder, and then the hologram is projected into the middle of the clear cylinder.
A person in a bottle.
Yeah, person in a bottle, person in a tube.
And you can walk around it, and you can view it from all sides. You could be a cylinder magician. So look all around. Don't see anything, right?
Smoke and mirrors. Yeah. No, it's a cylinder.
So Telehuman 2 teleports people live to meetings at a distance. No headset or 3D glasses required.
Right. You just have to stand still in the cylinder.
Right. So that's one. That's a new interface. Another one is called Wall++ at Carnegie Mellon and Disney Research. And they have developed a system, the Wall++, and it creates interactive walls that sense you. They sense the human touch, they sense gestures, they sense signals from appliances in the room.
The walls are becoming alive. I can just see. Okay, they describe that what you do to create this interactive wall is you tape sensors with masking tape to the wall in a certain pattern, and then you paint over it with special paint that has electro-sensing properties.
You know what I'm getting? I think an easy way to describe this might be it just turns any wall into a giant smart touchscreen.
That's right, a giant smart touchscreen that you can access with your whole body. You can use your toes, your knees, your mouth, your cheeks. You can lean against it.
Full body video games. Huge right. Digital whiteboard.
There you go. You can high-five somebody on the other side of the world in real time, in real size.
Yeah.
Room scale.
Your walls become your interface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This reminds
me very much of a project that we were lucky to be involved in before there was Skype even, before there was the connectivity of screens to screens through telephones. And that was the Big Wall project where we were trying to set up a live wall in two different places in the world so that people could wave to each other through this wall.
Yeah, you'd have this giant wall and on one side would be people in one country and the other would be in the other.
Yeah.
Hey, we could use that at the Mexican border.
That's right.
Say hi to the caravans.
There you go.
Today, but you can't.
You don't need to come. You don't need to cross the wall.
No,
just
you
wave.
Can just watch.
Wave virtually.
We'll send drones with stuff.
Right. The walls will have sensors. They'll know you're there.
Yes.
They'll do your talking
Smart
for you.
Smart walls.
Smart walls. All right.
Yes. So on the third one, let me just finish, then we'll go on to a completely different topic. The Lumi Watch. An interactive invention. It has a little built-in projector in your watch. And you touch your watch and it projects onto your skin an image just above the watch.
Anyway, just that's Lumi like watch. Snow crash.
Woo.
All right. You ready for a break?
Yeah, let's go for the break.
Okay, here we go. Bye.
Hey folks, welcome back to the show. As many of you know, we've often explored the connection between science and shamanism. And to help you get a deeper insight of this intersection personally, we suggest you check out a free event, a global online gathering of shamans, May 1st through 9th. This is pretty unique in that there's a tremendous number of very interesting shamanic type people that are part of what is called the Modern Shaman Mystery School. And it's about people with healing powers, divine purpose, prosperity issues, visionary medicine, indigenous wisdom, a nice mix of all these edgy topics.
It's what people used to call the New Age, except now it's the Millennial New Age, and it's really edgy.
Yeah, a lot. They call it the Global Shamanic Revival. About that yearning for connection, meaning, expanded states of awareness that capitalism seems to erode.
It's true. People really used to discuss their spiritual attainments or aspirations a lot more. It was a lot more normal in the 60s. And now people have become so scientific that they don't really discuss life's purpose so much anymore.
As we play with our pocket supercomputers, there simultaneously is a resurgence of interest in the ancient ways.
Yes, well.
And that.
The ancient ways never get old.
So if you want to navigate that world a little bit, I suggest you check out this website, www.modernshamanmysteryschool.com. ModernShamanMysterySchool.com.
It's the kind of webinar we like to turn on.
And that's brought to you by Entheo Nation. We just found out about that ourselves from the organizer in Spain.
Yeah.
Another fun global event to plug into. They have both a free version and a paid version. The paid, of course, you get access to all the lectures later, or the talks, the ceremonies, whatever they'll be doing. Online.
Free, you have to catch it live as it flies by.
That's it. So that mentioned, let's look at how to raise robot-proof children.
Oh, something I've always wondered. Now, what's supposed to happen here? Is this like dog-proof children where somehow they treat the dog right so it doesn't kill them?
Robot-proof children is where you understand that there'll still be jobs in the future. You just have to make sure your child is ready for them, the right ones.
Right.
It's not the same jobs as today. And it's more of an avocation than a job, I think, that it's going. Because the machines will be able to do a lot of the more boring, repetitive thing. Anything that's repetitive, the machines will be able to do.
Right.
So the creativity, the realms of creativity, the artistry of creation, the creation of new ideas. I don't think the machines have that down yet. The idea that we come up with something phenomenally new or insightful. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, could have the machines figured out flight, for example, without
human intervention?
Intervention?
Without human beings looking at birds and saying, I want to do that. I want to try that.
Well, you know, that would be an interesting experiment to build a robot and say, fly, and see what it can figure out to do that. Probably take a while. But we do have leaps of awareness where we suddenly will link vast amounts of information from one realm that we are familiar with another realm.
What are you thinking of, for instance?
Where, say, you might be an expert in cooking and you might be studying physics and you might be able to see how you can apply physics science ideas into your chemistry of cooking. I believe there's a whole arena just like that of scientific cooking. Where you use all kinds of interesting pressures.
A beaker and a test tube and a Bunsen burner.
Yeah, that sort of thing. Steam. Right. You know, you work with different aspects of...
Well, cooking is chemistry. Chemistry is cooking.
I always thought the kitchen was kind of a girl chemistry kit.
Absolutely.
More than girls. And when you start getting into weird science, you bring in the guys. Want to help out. They'll get
when
kicked out of the kitchen.
When it stops being practical, talk to the men.
That sort of thinking, yeah. Mm-hmm. Getting away from traditional trade jobs. Also, learning about robotics and seeing how to make them better, you know, how to make better robots. Be part of the revolution by creating the technologies to serve us in better ways. Think about that and use your skills to create that.
Yeah. I think the main thing that's going to make it possible for all humans of the future to have jobs is the reinvention of attitudes of gratitude and inclusion. And instead of the entire economy being a race, the entire economy being a cultural experiment where you get rich by including yourself and finding ways to include other people. What in the heck is going on? Did you just get hacked?
That's fine. Brought up Jeff Bezos, our next story.
Oh, really? That was Jeff Bezos' music?
Yeah, well, it was, you know, Amazon taking over. What can I say?
Okay. Go, Alexa. So tell us what you want us to know.
Well, this is the next story. You ready?
I'm ready for a sudden transition.
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. There's a story I saw on CNET on the weird advantage of Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin space program over SpaceX, our buddy Elon's.
See, I don't even know why people compare them. They're so different.
Jeff and Elon?
Yeah, Elon.
Well, they're both billionaires. They're racing to create rockets for space. Musk has a head start. Bezos is looking for ways to one-up them.
I guess they're both in the delivery business in some ways.
Yeah.
They're both trying to deliver cargo to space.
Moving stuff from here to there.
But Amazon is only aiming for the atmosphere. They're not even leaving the atmosphere,
That's not
they?
True. No, no.
Oh, how far is Amazon going?
Well, their Blue Origin spacecraft, it's owned by Jeff Bezos, it's called the New Shepard. Okay, and it's designed specifically for customers, right? Amazon's a customer-based service for you, right?
That's right.
So they have this really nice, cushy zone where you can float around in zero gravity, experience the Earth from zero gravity in its full splendor with giant windows.
So Blue Origin is basically a zero-G dance club?
Well, it's a zero-G gawk at the Earth Club.
Right. Okay. It's a zero-G scenic view of Earth.
Yeah, scenic Earth. Yeah. It's which is one of the goals is to see space. You know, it's one of the next great sightseeing goals of our species is to see our planet.
Well, I'll tell you, if you have to spend $10,000 on a ticket to go spend 10 minutes in space, you might want to put that money towards a VR rig.
Oh, no. It's free for Prime members.
Sure. All right.
Super Prime members.
Super Prime. Right. Space Prime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the two-day delivery to the lunar surface. Oh, man. Well, yeah, Jeff revealed this Sunday that he's trying to get a competitive advantage by having these great experiences.
Perks.
Yeah, where people can experience space, not just NASA or people going to the space station.
I think they're in a different zone. Even though Amazon is all about delivering packages on Earth and creating a whole new kind of efficient technology for that.
Yeah.
In space, you've got SpaceX really pioneering ways to make it cheaper to launch things from the Earth and then use them in space. Mm-hmm. And you've got Bezos with Blue Origin creating vehicles that will take tourists up to a scenic spot and bring them back again. Possibly they'll get into delivering tourists to space hotels like the Bigelow Space Hotels.
Well, yeah, if you look at the bigger picture, you can see all these forces are happening to conspire to create a space-based economy.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we'll have initially low Earth orbit tourist experiences, or not even orbit, just up and down. That's the first layer.
Yeah, the first layer is up and down,
That's,
right.
That's Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin Group and in Galactic.
Virgin Galactic,
mm-hmm. right. Those are the two that give you the five-minute experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then there's the hotels, and then it'll become missions, what you can do, what else can you do in low Earth
missions
orbit.
Missions to asteroids, missions to moons, missions to planets.
Cheaper rates for those who want to help clean up all the junk in low Earth orbit. There's a lot of junk up there.
Space cowboys going up with their...
Clean up crews. discounts for cleanup crews. Yeah. Then there'll be all the new entrepreneurial uses of low Earth orbit, like the Bill Gates network that he's financing for
live streaming, live video streaming of shots from Earth.
You'll be able to dial up any place on the Earth live.
That's right.
Matter of fact, you remember, was it not directed? It was the Dish. Dish had a whole deal with being able to see the Earth live from space. But they had one camera at 22,000 miles away. It's kind of remote. But no, this is close up. So we'll see all kinds of new innovations along those lines. So good luck, guys. I mean, I hope all of this pans out because I really like to be part of a global
space-faring civilization.
Civilization, yeah.
And let's get to the solar system in our lifetime.
Right. So next hour, Dr. Bruce Damer, who has actually been very involved with this spacefaring effort. And also, where did we come from to begin with? What's going on with the origins of life itself? And what does it have to do with space? We'll find out more on the next half hour with Bruce.